I was sitting in my office and I heard a call go out that, there was a grass fire up by Jefferson School, and the body was found in that grass fire.
Yes?
Yes.
And is the person that you saw outside of Max Liquor at that table?
Yes.
And what sort of eyewear is he wearing?
Dark sunglasses.
And that's who you saw outside of Max Liquor on September 17, 1990?
Yes.
Don Schaefer strolled into the courtroom, tall, lean, erect. A cop's cop. Carefully explained how he came to lead the investigation of the murder of Jennifer Ann Lewis.
I was sitting in my office and I heard a call go out that, there was a grass fire up by Jefferson School, and the body was found in that grass fire.
When you heard that, you were in your office at the station?
Yes.
What did you do when you heard that call?
I wasn't sure if my captain, which was Captain Ted Carroll, or in his office was Lieutenant Kern. I wasn't sure if they heard that. I stepped in their office and said, did you hear that last call that just went out of a body being found at Jefferson School?
And what did you do after talking to Captain Carroll and Lieutenant Kern?
Went directly to that location.
You know what Captain Carroll and Lieutenant Kern did?
They were right behind me.
How far from the police station to Jefferson School?
Probably less than a mile, maybe 6-8 blocks.
How long do you think it took before you arrived at Jefferson School?
Approximately 6 or 7 minutes.
Describe what you observed when you arrived at the scene.
The fire department was already there. Multiple fire trucks had already kind of blocked off the area. We parked probably approximately a block back to the west of the scene, and then they walked us down into where the body was at.
I'm going to show you what's been marked the state's exhibit 63. You recognize proposed state's exhibit 63?
Yes.
And what is state's exhibit 63?
That's an aerial of that area, which would encompass Jefferson School and 10 Hart Block West 12th Street, as well as the area where the body was found and the fire took place.
You were involved in this investigation starting on September 17th, 1990.
Yes.
And you were a police officer in Davenport for 44 years?
Yes.
The state exhibit 63, aggregate effect. That area, Davenport, including Jefferson School?
Yes.
So I'm going to move to admit exhibit 63. No objection.
63 is admitted.
Chief Schaefer, you explained as you arrived. Well, first of all, can you show us where Jefferson School is on State Exhibit 63?
This right here is Jefferson School.
And what street is Jefferson School on?
10th Street and Marquette.
And am I correct? Marquette is a fairly busy, one of the busier streets or a more major street in Davenport.
That's correct.
Runs north-south.
Yes.
When you arrived, I believe you said that the perimeter had been set up at Myrtle?
Yes.
Can you show us where Myrtle Street and 12th Street is?
Myrtle is this north-south street right there, and that was where anybody pulling up would have stopped their vehicle and parked and walked down.
And you testified that the fire department was there.
That's correct.
And they secured the scene at that time?
Yes.
And what's it meant by securing the scene?
That nothing could be tampered with or altered prior to us getting there.
So they make sure that nobody's going through the scene, going up to the scene, that sort of thing?
Yes.
And did they appear to have it fully secured when you arrived?
Yes.
Who else, was there anybody else present when you arrived, other than firefighters?
There was a couple of uniformed police officers that were there, and then Captain Carroll and Lieutenant Kern and myself.
You mentioned the name of both Captain Ted Carroll and Dennis Kern, who basically arrived at the scene simultaneous with you, correct?
That's correct.
And at that time, how many years had you had on the Danforth Police Department? In 90?
18, maybe.
And at that time, you were... a lieutenant, a commander of the Detective Bureau.
That's correct.
So you had, how much experience did you have at that time with homicide investigations?
Approximately 4 years.
Captain Ted Carroll, describe him.
Kind of my mentor. Ted was on about 10 years before me, and as I came up through the ranks, or even as a patrol officer, he was always kind of the individual you looked up to. He was a great detective, learned a lot from him, and I patterned myself after him a little bit as I was going up through the ranks.
On September 17th, 1990, an experienced detective?
Well, yes.
Very
experienced.
Does that report have quite a few homicides?
I think we average about 6 a year.
Now, Dennis Kern is another name you had mentioned who arrived simultaneously with you. Describe, first of all, what was Dennis Kern's rank?
He was a lieutenant, same as I was.
And what was his, describe his experience.
He's an expert in forensic evidence.
And at crime scenes investigation?
Yes.
How long have you been doing that?
Not positive, but probably about 10 to 12 years.
Also very experienced?
Yes.
In homicide investigation?
Yes.
For all crime scene investigation?
All crime scenes. He was in charge of the evidence bureau.
When he arrived, what did he do?
Well, Danny would be in charge of that scene, I mean, as far as collecting all the evidence and so forth. So the three of us, Captain Carroll, Lieutenant Kern, and myself, started getting a game plan together, making sure that we had the scene secured and so forth, and then had not tampered it. So no one had approached the body. The victim at that point, we could just see it from about 10, 12 feet away from the road. Now, there was a hard road right alongside of it.
So what did you do then?
While we were just standing, it was just a couple of minutes, two of my undercover officers came up. I must tell you that the undercover officers monitor both sides of the river for because of the street crime and what the nature of their investigations are. And they came up to me and said they monitor the Illinois police radios. And they said that that Rock Island had just put out a missing person on a 9-year-old. And that the most characteristic, identifying characteristic of that individual was that she had protruding front teeth and a gap between those two teeth.
And that was because your undercover guys were monitoring the Rock Island Police Department radio traffic.
That's correct.
And after obtaining that information that Rock Island had a missing girl, and her description. What did you do then?
Well, I told Lieutenant Kern I need to go up and identify this, our victim, to see if this was Rock Island's missing person so that we could coordinate that investigation at that time. And so at that point, Lieutenant Kern and I got into a discussion about walking up to the body.
Don Schaefer spoke of having the scene secured, but initially, the scene was one of chaos. As a reporter, I arrived at the scene before the Schaefer and the other detectives. I was present when the firefighters extinguished the flames on Jennifer's body. Another reporter, Tom Schnee, who wrote for the Moline and Rock Island newspapers, nearly fell over the corpse when he arrived. TV reporters came and set up their cameras only a few feet away from the body. Myself and other reporters stood just a few feet from the body and wandered across the field, interviewing the medical examiners and others at will. During Tuesday's testimony, prosecutor Mike Walton questioned Don Schaefer about a key witness in the case. Her name is Wanda Hughes. An Iowa appellate court granted Stanley Liggins this third trial based in part on the prosecution not disclosing to the defense that Hughes was a paid police informant in 87 other cases. But Schaefer said he was unaware that she was a confidential informant for the department. He said then Corporal Kevin Murphy knew she was a confidential informant, but not he. Murphy, who died in January, previously told suspect convictions that he was unaware of her status as a confidential informant. Schaefer's testimony continues today. Another witness testifying Tuesday, Antonio Holmes, said he saw Stanley Liggins and Jennifer Lewis the day of the murder at Max Liquor in Rock Island.
Okay, so am I pointing to it here? Over here on the right side, there's an area right here?
Yes.
Right, and this is where you parked your car?
Yes.
Do you recall whether there were any other cars in the parking lot when you went in?
I just noticed her car that's always, used to be always there parked at the far end.
Whose car was that?
Charlotte's.
All right. And that would be, is that Charlotte?
The lady who owns the place.
And she also works there?
Yes.
And she usually parks her car on the same side of the building?
Yeah, at the very end.
Now we see in this particular photograph, isn't there a van right in front, right?
Yes.
You didn't see any cars there?
No.
Maybe there's a car on the other side. Were there any cars there that you recall?
I didn't notice any other car but the green one.
Okay. And did you notice any person there when you got out of your car?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
There was someone standing on the corner, like right on the other side of that that ice sign.
All right, so I'm pointing to the right side of the ice sign. Was the person standing there?
Yes.
And can you describe the person?
He was a black man, taller than me.
Did you say anything to him?
I just walked past him, so how's it going?
You said, how's it going?
Yeah.
Did that person respond?
I think he might have said okay, but I didn't. I was just walking.
Was anyone else with that person?
No.
Is that person in the courtroom today?
Yeah.
And where is he seated and what's he wearing?
A gray jacket, and he's sitting over there.
I'm sorry?
He's sitting up right over there.
Okay, across. So I'm sitting at one counsel table with my co-counsel, and then right on the other side of the courtroom here next to us is a table with three people. Yes?
Yes.
Right. And is the person that you saw outside of Max Liquor at that table?
Yes.
And what sort of eyewear is he wearing?
Dark sunglasses.
And that's what you saw outside of Max Liquor on September 17th, 1990?
Yes.
Was there anyone with him?
No.
Had you ever seen him before?
No.
Did you go into the store?
Yes.
And when you went into the store, was Charlotte there?
Yes.
She was working behind the counter?
Yes.
Was there anyone else there?
There was a little girl in front of me.
And there was a little girl at the counter?
Yes.
And what do you remember about the little girl?
She just had dark hair and she was getting some gum and change back.
Do you remember anything about what she was wearing?
I believe it was like a light colored top, but that's about it.
A And then did the little girl leave?
Yes.
You picked out your port or?
Well, I had to get it from her.
It's all behind the counter?
Yes.
All right, so you walk up to Charlotte and did what you intended to do, and that was buy a quart of beer?
All right.
Then did you leave?
Yes.
And when you went outside, did you see the little girl?
No.
And did you see the man sitting at this table anymore?
No.
What did you do?
Got in the car and left.
Where did you go to?
I went to Davenport.
Where in Davenport?
Out to a place called Spring Village.
What's, describe for the jury what Spring Village
is. It's an apartment complex in Davenport. A friend of mine lived out there.
And how long were you there?
Probably 45 minutes to an hour. Just enough to sit and talk and drink my beer.
Then where'd you go?
Home.
And was there anything you had in mind to do when you got back
home? I was going to watch a football game that night.
So it was Monday night?
Yes.
You're going to watch Monday night football?
Yes.
What time was it broadcast, Monday night football?
It started at 8 o'clock.
And did you get there how much before the game started?
I got there probably 15 to 10 minutes before the game started.
Did you remain there the rest of the night?
Yes.
Now, at some point, did you return to Max Liquors?
A few days later.
And did you once again see Charlotte?
Yes.
And did anything remarkable happen with regard to your interaction with Charlotte at that time?
We discussed the incident that happened with the little girl on Monday, and she said she was standing right in front of you when you were in here. So.
And what did that do?
It just made me think about, you know, what had happened at night, you know, but.
And so what did you do with that knowledge?
I contacted the Rock Island Police Department.
Davenport police picked up Holmes and took him to the station. And they showed him some mugshots. He said he picked out Liggins from a photo array. Holmes returned the next day to the police department because he said he had been drinking and he wanted to make sure that during the first interview he had made a correct identification. Liggins' attorney, Aaron Haubacher, was skeptical, and after having Holmes listen to a recording of the second police interview, Holmes became more equivocal.
And does listening to that audio help you remember what you said back then?
Yes.
And that interview, my understanding, you correct me if I'm wrong, is when you went back to explain to them that maybe you weren't sure, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you went back because you were intoxicated the day before, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And in listening then to that interview, do you remember being asked, was that the man you saw standing outside the store and answering, I'm not sure?
Yes.
And you remember that now, don't you?
Yes.
Okay, and that's what you told law enforcement back then, September of 1990.
Yes.
And then you remember now being asked, and that picture, the picture of Mr. Liggins, represents or resembles the guy that you saw. And you answered, yeah, but I couldn't swear. Do you remember that now?
Yes.
Those are your words and your voice on that audio, weren't they?
Yes.
And you then remember being asked, you couldn't be for sure on that? And you answered, right.
Yes.
Okay. Now, at no point during that interview did you tell law enforcement, well, now I am sure.
I didn't hear myself say that.
No. The way you left it with law enforcement on that day was them showing you pictures of Mr. Liggins again, and you saying, I'm not sure, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then you came, then you testified later after you entered into a plea deal that you then were sure, correct?
That was during deposition, yes.
Okay. And at least in the 19, 99 testimony that you provided, you saw the words yourselves. So you wouldn't even acknowledge that you even were asked that question, correct?
I thought we were talking about a different time when I said that.
But we now know what we're talking about as far as that interview is concerned.
Yes, so I have said it before, yes.
And after that interview, no, strike that. Was it a transcript of that interview prepared and presented to you?
I don't remember if it was.
A transcript. It was, so nobody gave you a statement or typed up what he said and presented to you for.
Then, or yeah, I had one of those lately. Yeah.
Last did week. Did you actually sign a copy of the statement that was typed up as a result of that interview?
I don't remember signing it, but I could have. I don't remember signing it.
You were asked if you would sign it after it was typed up, and it was reflected what you said, correct?
Right.
And do you remember if law enforcement came back to you later and said, hey, we've got this typed up, would you sign this?
I don't remember signing it, but I could have signed it, yeah.
You don't have any knowledge of signing off on the statement they prepared, correct?
I'm not denying I didn't say it, I just don't remember signing it.
But the prosecution bolstered Holmes' testimony during redirect.
Mr. Holmes, on September 21st and September 22nd of 1990, you were looking at photographs.
Yes.
Today, you're in a courtroom.
Yes.
You are viewing the defendant in person, isn't that right?
Yes.
Just as you saw him in person on September 17th, 1990, isn't that right?
Yes.
As you sit here in the same room with me today, are you certain that the man in the dark glasses at the other table is the man you saw outside Max Liquor on September 17th, 1990?
Yes.
And you've been certain each and every time you've testified, isn't that right?
Yes.
Because you've been live with him and seen him in person.
Yes.
I'm Benjamin Payne with WVIK Quad Cities NPR Radio. I'm speaking with reporter Scott Reeder. He's covering the criminal retrial of Stanley Liggins, which began its second week today in Waterloo, Iowa, after jurors returned from a Labor Day recess. Scott, thanks for joining me.
It's terrific to be here.
So how did week two begin?
It began with former Davenport Police Chief Don Schaefer coming forward and testifying about the investigation. At the time of the investigation, he was a lieutenant in the Detective Bureau, and he walked the jurors through what he did in identifying Stanley Liggins as a suspect in the case. He did quite a bit of there, and then one of the issues, of course, that's come up, the reason we're having a retrial, is that a key witness in the case had been a paid police informant in 87 other cases. And that was never disclosed to the defense. Obviously, that's a financial relationship between the Davenport police and the witness. But also it raises all kinds of questions of, hey, what's the odds that the woman who just happened to be a witness to this case also happens to be on the Davenport Police payroll? I mean, that's what runs through your mind. What Schaefer testified was, hey, I didn't know that she was a paid police informant, and I did not pay her for her testimony in this particular case. And they asked, well, who did know in your department whether she was a paid police informant? And he said, well, the detective Kevin Murphy knew. Now, Murphy was one of the lead investigators in this particular case involving Stanley Liggins. So it still begs the question of, did he or didn't he know? And I interviewed Kevin, about 2 years ago, and he indicated that he didn't know. So it's a little bit confusing here, you know, but That's part of it.
And can we expect to see Detective Kevin Murphy on the stand?
Well, no. Kevin died in January.
Okay. Is there any posthumous testimony that is available? Because I understand there's been some other posthumous testimony in this case.
Yes, there has been. But he almost certainly will be have his testimony from previous trials read into the record. But nobody can ask him about this undercover police informant that was supposedly working for him. And, you know, one of the questions is, did he not, why didn't the defense get notified? I mean, if what Don Schaefer says is true, wouldn't that just kind of stand out? Like, we need to tell the defense that this is a person on the payroll. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do, is turn over any potentially exculpatory evidence to the defense.
I understand there was another big witness in today's proceedings, apparently the last person other than Jennifer Lewis's killer to see her alive. Could you tell us more about that?
Yes, his name is Antonio Holmes. He was a young man at the time. He lived in Davenport and went over to Rock Island to shop for a cassette tape. That tells you about how long ago this case happened. And he wanted to buy a quart of beer, and he first got turned down at Walgreens because he didn't have his ID with him. So he went over to Max Liquor, which was a mom-and-pop business on 11th Street in Rock Island. And when he went in there, Jennifer, according to his testimony, Jennifer was just ahead of him in line. And he remembers her. And he remembers when he was walking in, seeing a man standing there outside the liquor store. And he said that man was Stanley Liggins and identified him as the man that was sitting in the courtroom today. But there's some problems. Or the defense is trying to impeach his testimony. And one of the issues was he came forward several days after the murder. Police brought him into the police department and questioned him in Davenport. And he had supposedly identified a mugshot of Stanley Liggins and said that's the man he saw. Then the next day he came back in and says, I'm not sure if I identified the right person or not. I was really drunk last night when you brought me in here. So they had him look at the mugshot again, and he kind of said, well, it kind of looks like him, but I'm not absolutely sure. I'm just not real sure. And so the defense tried very hard to impeach his testimony using that tape and, you know, like, wait a minute here. You weren't absolutely sure, and then you went on and you testified, and now three trials saying you're absolutely sure that it was Stanley Liggins. What gives here? And then they pointed out, you know, you've been in prison a number of times, and one of the conditions of these plea agreements that you've been receiving is you always provide testimony, accurate and honest testimony in any trials. And what have you ever testified any other trial other than this one? He said, well, no, I've only testified in this case. Oh, I take that back. He did say he testified in some other case of many, many, many years ago. But so the defense is obviously suggesting that this might be manufactured testimony in exchange for him giving a getting a reduction in his prison sentence. He has said and he's testified that he has not received anything in exchange for his testimony. But I think it was fascinating to watch the jurors. They were in rapt attention listening to him. And so that was an interesting testimony, to be sure.
Was there anything else worth noting from today's proceedings?
I just thought it was interesting. Schaefer began the gave his prosecution testimony. The defense started the cross-examination. There's two witnesses that had come in from out of town that interrupted this testimony, so they gave it out of order. So he's expected to testify on Wednesday, and I think there's going to be a lot of fireworks there, because I think it's very obvious that the defense strategy in this is they've got to put on trial the police investigation itself, and they've got to put on trial the integrity of the individuals that were involved in this case. And so I think that's going to be interesting. One of the things, and Schaefer, since he was the head of the investigation, he is going to be the epicenter of the defense efforts to discredit the investigation. Another thing that's interesting, I thought, was they brought out a news clip, and they were suggested that Stanley Liggins might be the suspect in the case before an arrest had been made. And they were, the defense was trying to suggest that it was Don Schaefer that was the person leaking this. Now, you got to remember, in this, during this investigation, there were dozens and dozens of police officers and other law enforcement people from a variety of agencies involved. And speaking as one of the reporters who had sources leaking to him all the time during this investigation, I kind of found it a little bit amusing that they were suggesting it was Don Schaefer, because try as I might during those days, I could never get Don Schaefer to talk about anything off the record to me or give me anything along those lines. And that was pretty much the experience of most of the reporters I knew. I mean, it just, that wasn't his style. I knew other people, and I had people in that investigation leak to me, and I think they were working on their own volition, but the suggestion that Don Schaefer was the source of this is just kind of ridiculous.
All right. Thanks for your time, Scott.
Thank you.
I'm Nikki T, the host of Strictly Homicide, a narrative true crime podcast that covers the lesser-known cases that have happened in the natural state. Find us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, and all major podcast apps. Visit strictlyhomicide.com or find us on social media by searching Strictly Homicide Podcast. Until then, stay safe, especially you, Arkansas.